The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, and Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Silas House. He joins us on the telephone in Jackson, Mississippi. Hello, Silas.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's great, Silas, and I really enjoyed your new book. It's called Southernmost. I take it this has been percolating in the back of your mind for a while. How long did it take to decide to write this?
I first started it about 10 years ago. However, it was sold about 3 years ago. It just took it a while to get out into the world.
Hmm. And I understand that there are some autobiographical elements in this.
Well, I think there's autobiographical elements in all of my work to some degree. You know, you have to put yourself in each character. But the lead character is, most of the characters are totally fictional. I guess that the essential truth is, somewhat autobiographical in that it does deal with this evangelical preacher who badly rejects his beloved brother when his brother comes out to him. And then after his brother disappears, he spends about the next 10 years sort of evolving on the issue and educating himself, examining himself. And so the autobiographical elements there would be that I was raised in the evangelical church. My parents are still holiness. And when I came out, that was a long process of acceptance from my family and the community. And so what I'm trying to write about in the book is to show different levels of acceptance from people and how sometimes it's surprising the people who evolve on this issue. Like, I'm just so proud of my parents because even though, they still go to that church and they're very conservative, but they have been very accepting and loving of me. And so, I think people are more complex and complicated than we give them credit for sometimes.
And you grew up in a little town in Kentucky, is that right?
That's right, in eastern Kentucky, down near the Tennessee border.
And you still make your home in Kentucky, don't you?
Yes. I live in Berea, Kentucky, which is just below Lexington, and I teach there at Berea College, which is a small liberal arts college. We were the first college to integrate in the South, and so we have a long history of social justice and civil rights.
And Berea is also known for would you call it a work-study program?
Yes, no one pays tuition to go there.
Uh-huh.
Everybody has a work position that, so they work their way through school.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about Berea. My guest is Silas House, and his new novel is Southernmost, and after you read the book, you'll figure out where the title came from. It refers to where part of the story takes place. Why'd you decide to pick this particular locale?
Well, I started working on the book, and really all that I knew was that I wanted to write a book about a parent who kidnaps a child. And around the time I had started it, I was invited to the Key West Literary Seminar, which is a great two-week conference that takes place in January. And as soon as I got there, I thought, this is where my character will run off to, because it was so different than anywhere else I had ever been in America. But it was also somewhere that was drivable from where my character lived. He could drive there within a day. And it was just so so rich in sense of place, and it was so sensual, the quality of life, the food, the music, the ocean, just everything about it, what I knew that it would be fun to write about.
Let's talk about your central characters. We see this story mostly from the viewpoint of your preacher, and his name is Asher. Tell us about him.
Well, I think he's a lot like a lot of people that I know in that he is raised, you know, in a very strict church, and he's taught not only by his church but the whole culture one way of being, and he's not exposed to too many people who are different than him. And so when he is confronted with somebody who's different than him, he reacts in a bad way. But when he's called out on that, he starts to really look at himself and think, you know, am I responding to this in the right way? And so he really examines his own belief and takes a long look at that. And I think a lot of Americans have done that in the last decade or two on this issue, because a whole lot of Americans have somebody they love who is LGBTQ. And whereas, you know, used to, it was perfectly acceptable to shun those people and just erase them, I think now people are examining themselves a bit more on that and thinking, wait, you know, this is somebody I love and somebody that I want in my life. And so it's forced them to really take a long look at what they really believe in. And so Asher thinks about this for 10 years, but then a couple of things happen that lead to him having to act on what he's been thinking about. First, there's a devastating flood that happens, and that causes a gay couple who have been living very quietly in their community to seek shelter at Asher's house because their house has been swept away by the flood. And Asher's wife refuses them shelter. And that is just too much for Asher. It's his breaking point. Their marriage is already in trouble. But that is a bridge too far for him. And that really causes their marriage to start to dissolve. At the same time, people start to blame the flood on the fact that the flood happened the same day that marriage equality was passed by the Supreme Court. This idea of God's wrath, you know. And so this leads Asher to stand up in front of his congregation and give this fiery sermon, you know, calling for kindness and compassion instead of judgment. And that doesn't go over well with his congregation. But at the same time, a teenager films him, and he becomes sort of a folk hero through this viral video. And he's especially a folk hero for rural gay people. And so one thing leads to another. He, you know, he gets a divorce. He loses his job at the church. He loses custody of the little boy, mainly because of the video. And so he kidnaps him and runs off to Key West, hoping to find his brother there.
My guest is Silas House. His new novel is Southernmost. Silas, I was worried about giving away spoilers, and I appreciate you hitting some of those points there. I didn't know whether we were going to talk about kidnapping or the marriage falling apart or any of that. But as it begins, you open it very dramatically with this flood that you describe. Mm-hmm. And we also know, as we're reading it early on, that this preacher, Asher, is going through his own personal crisis because, for one thing, he can't pray. He's lost his desire to pray. And for a preacher, that's pretty big.
Yes. Well, right. And, you know, as a novelist, your main thing that you want to do with your lead character is to put them in as much trouble as possible. Mm. And, you know, it's I think readers enjoy seeing a character in trouble and then, you know, living with them through the next 300 pages as they work themselves out of that trouble as much as they can. Sometimes, you know, working out of that trouble is more interior than it is anything else. And so, yeah, I mean, for me as a person who, my faith has always been really important to me. And I thought, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen for this preacher who has had such a profound belief all of his life? And of course it would be for him to start to really doubt and not only doubt, but lose his ability to pray. And so you're on that journey with him as he sort of tries to recapture his belief and his ability to pray.
My guest is Silas House, and he's on book tour right now for his new novel, Southernmost, and you have an opportunity to meet him. He will be in our area on Wednesday evening, June 27th, he'll be coming through Books and Company at the Green in Beaver Creek. That's at 7 o'clock. You can meet Silas. He'll be there talking about the book and signing copies. Wednesday, June 27th, 7 o'clock at Books and Company. I think up here in the north, of course, we're in southern Ohio. We kind of think of ourselves as being in the south. But up here in the north, we have sort of a monolithic view of the south, a lot of us, don't we? We kind of think of it as just this big chunk of people who are real conservative and probably really evangelical and a lot of things like that. But it's not true, is it?
I think those things are true in sort of the way people are voting in the South and things like that. But the thing is, when you sit down and talk to people individually, you realize that it's much more complex than that, you know. And so I think that's one thing I'm trying to do in the book is just put human faces on an issue like this and let you spend time with different people who have different reactions to an issue like this. For that reason, I think the book is maybe more relevant now than it was when I was writing it, because I think since the election, so many of us, no matter who we voted for, have really had to do self-examination and think, you know, somebody that I really love deeply has profoundly different views on what it means to be a good person. And I think LGBTQ people have been doing that forever. They've been thinking that forever. You know, they know that people in their families whom they love have really fundamental different ideas of what it means to be a good person. And, you know, now we're thinking about that based on who a person voted for. And I think we're at a terrible place in our country in that we can't really talk to each other anymore. Things are so fraught. There's such a lack of nuance. And so I think in times like that, the novel is more important than ever, because a novel, you know, spends 300 or so pages dealing with things like this and really getting into the meat of it instead of it just being a soundbite or, you know, a tweet or something like that.
Asher would seem to have married the ideal woman to be the wife of a preacher. And as their marriage is falling apart, one of the big reasons that this finally goes past the point of no return is because his wife, without informing Asher, is trying to get some counseling for their son. And their son is a pretty special little guy. He's a very distinctive character. I love this character. Tell us about the son.
Well, his name's Justin, and when the book starts, he's 8. When it ends, he's 10. And he's just very, very – he has empathy to the nth degree in that, you know, he's just so sensitive that every – he's aware of so much sadness in the world. From the mother's point of view, this is really dangerous. She worries about his sensitivity and it making, you know, she's afraid the world will just devour him. From his father's point of view, he loves the empathy and the kindness that his little boy possesses, and he doesn't want the world to erase that from him. So they have two really different points of view on how to raise this special child. And what I love most about Justin is he's the character in the book who absolutely knows who he is. And I think all the other characters are really trying to figure out who they are, even as adults. But Justin, even as a child, he already knows who he is, and he's accepted himself. And I think that's such a challenge for so many of us to do that.
Silas, I have several favorite characters in the book, but I think looking back after finishing it last night, I have to think that the one I would pick number one is Justin's grandmother. She's a very complex person too, and what an interesting woman.
Yes, thank you for saying that. I really love her, and I think that she represents a whole lot of people I know who, you know, that she is just she wants to do the right thing so badly. And she doesn't know what to do, and she makes some bad mistakes. You know, she she betrays people that she loves to try to honor the other people that she loves. She's in a terrible situation, and just tries to do the best she can. But ultimately, I think she's a very kind, open-hearted person, you know, who just eventually has to align herself with her daughter because it's her daughter.
Hmm. Silas, I think anyone who reads this book is going to come away with one opinion that we're probably all going to have, and that is that you, Silas House, have had a life where you've loved and understood a lot of really great dogs.
Mm. That's for sure. This is a book of dogs. Mm. There's a lot. There are only two dogs in it, but they're two very important dogs. In my mind, and it, you know, it doesn't matter if the reader absolutely realizes this or not. But I think the dogs are always manifestations of the divine. For instance, there's a missing dog, and there's a found dog, and once you read the book, that'll make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I just couldn't think of a better symbol for the divine or for God than a dog, because I think when I'm in the presence of a dog, it's when I'm really aware of just, you know, so much goodness and peacefulness. And, of course, those are two things that I associate with the divine. And so, yeah, I love the dogs in this book. And in a way, they have lived with me even more than some of the human characters.
Mm. And do you have a dog right now, Silas? Is there a dog waiting for you at home?
Yes, there is. And, you know, when I'm on this 17-city book tour, and I can talk to my family on the phone and all that, but it's hard being away from the dogs because so much of our interaction is just, you know, touching each other and, you know, a dog being in my lap and petting the dog and all that. Yeah. So I'm very homesick for my dogs.
Got more than one, huh?
I have two, and then my daughter has a dog. She lives right across the street, so I feel like he's with us all the time, too, our grand dog.
Mm. My guest is Silas House. His new novel is Southernmost. We've already let our listeners know that this story moves down to Key West, and we have some very important characters down there, too. Can we talk at all about any of them?
Sure. There's Belle.
Uh-huh.
Asher sort of lands at this complex where this woman owns two or three cottages, and he just looks out in that he finds this safe space that's sort of cut off from the rest of the world. You know, she doesn't have a lot of guests, so he can sort of hide out there, and he can work, and they have a lot more in common than first appears. And so he finds a kind of acceptance and a love there that he's never known before. One thing about Asher is he's always looking for a mother, you know, because he didn't have a good mother. And so at first he finds that in his mother-in-law, whom you mentioned, and then he finds it in Belle. Andy also finds a real true friend there, Ivona, whom, you know, there start to be more than friend feelings with her, which is something that a kind of romantic notion that he's never really felt before. His relationship with Lydia was much more about duty and, you know, getting married for the sake of it was time to get married and et cetera. So finding that kind of passion is really new for him. So, you know, these Belle and Ivona are just sort of the opposite of everything he's known his whole life because they're free spirits and they're so accepting and laid back, and they just love to eat and they love, you know, to sit in the sun and et cetera. They love dogs.
Mm.
So they're his kind of people.
As we've been reading the book for a while, as readers will figure out that it's inevitable that Asher will go on a quest and somehow find his brother who he's estranged from. His brother has been cryptically communicating with him, and that's a big surprise when we finally do encounter the brother And number one, we find out what he does. And then I'm thinking it must have been difficult for you to decide how his brother was going to react when Asher finds him. Is he going to be happy to see Asher? Is he going to be upset? How's he going to feel? That must have been tough for you to decide how to make him feel.
It was. The main thing that was hard was figuring out how Asher would find him or not, you know. And I think the way it all happens, it just works out perfectly. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, I feel like I didn't really have any control over or orchestrate. It's just the way the story unfolds. And often those sort of organic things are the best things in a book. I feel like as a writer, the less I orchestrate things, the better they are. So I'm really pleased with the way the whole third act plays out.
Do these characters just take over and start writing themselves?
To some degree, yeah. But that's mainly because I spend years and years just thinking about the characters, you know, so that I sort of give them a lot of power. Because when I come to the page, I really, really know them very well.
Listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. My guest is Silas House, and his novel is Southernmost, and he's on book tour right now for it. You can meet Silas. He will be in our area Wednesday evening, June 27th at 7 o'clock. He will be at Books & Company at The Green. That's 4453 Walnut Street in Beaver Creek, and he'll be talking about the book and signing copies of it. I was looking at some of your bio information, and I saw where you've got a lot of writers that I really admire and respect who admire and respect you, and one of them really caught my eye because I absolutely was crazy about Larry Brown. I miss him.
Oh, me too. In fact, I'm going to Larry's hometown today. And it's going to be kind of hard for me to go back there because the last time that I spent any time there, I was with him. He was a good friend of mine and really took me under his wing when I was a really young writer and was really influential on my work. And, you know, he wrote about people that you don't often see in literature and and that's one thing that I want to do. I want to represent people that aren't shown in the media as much.
What an amazing writer he was.
Yes.
I keep hoping that they'll find some manuscripts of his that were never published and put them out.
Yes. Maybe so.
Yeah. He was a firefighter.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And you actually got to know him.
Yes, we became good friends, and one reason was because I was a mail carrier, and he was a firefighter, and so we sort of had that in common, and we both loved pocket knives, so we really connected in that way, and you know, we both grew up in really agricultural communities. I grew up working in tobacco, and he grew up working in cotton and gardens and et cetera, so we had a lot in common and just became good friends.
You just reminded me, the last time I had you on the show, you were still a mail carrier. So how long ago did you stop doing that?
I was able to quit about a year after my first book came out.
Okay.
And I loved my customers on the mail route. And it was, you know, there were so many great things about it. I loved being out in nature all day. And my mail route was out by the lake, and so it was really beautiful. I got to become really good friends with a lot of my customers. But it is a tough job. I hope everybody appreciates their mail carrier because I do not miss getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I do not miss the heat and the freezing cold and et cetera.
Now, I assume that was a rural route, and you're driving around out there in your hot truck, and you got to have the window open, and you've got all the weather coming in, and yeah.
Yep. Yep. It's always the heat or the, you know, the extreme heat or the extreme cold. I never had a problem with dogs, which a lot of people assume.
Well, you probably just petted them, gave them a little snack, huh?
Yes.
Silas House joins us. His new novel is Southernmost. What is the process for you now that you've been doing this writing thing all these years? Do you have a way that an idea develops? How do you decide this is going to be my next book?
Well, I'll take an idea and just see how complex it can become. And if there's enough complexity there, and also if I start, and I don't mean to sound too new agey or superstitious, but also I think if I start seeing sort of signs or, you know, things that direct me that this story is the one I need to be telling, things just sort of present themselves, you know, and maybe I conjure that on my own. But for instance, when I was working on this book, I kept being presented with the works or the life of Thomas Merton, who was a Catholic monk who lived in Kentucky and became world famous, a really well-known writer. He was very ecumenical, and he sort of joined Catholicism and Buddhism as one of his things that he's well known for. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, music that kept coming to me that seemed to fit this novel, et cetera, et cetera. So I think to some degree you sort of conjure that world, and if all that adds up properly, then you know you have a book worth working on. And, you know, if it's something that you can live with for years and years, because, you know, I've never written a book that took less than a few years. Mm-hmm. So it better be something you care about.
I'm picturing you making a pilgrimage to Gethsemane.
I've been to Gethsemane many times. Mm-hmm. It's a really special place.
And yeah.
I really encourage people to go there if they're seeking a peaceful place.
That's where Merton lived for many years.
Yes.
Your character, Lydia, Asher's wife, I think she comes off through most of the story as being someone we don't like very much, but I think you did a great job of making us decide, you know, she's not so bad. We kind of had to look through her eyes at life, and we sort of come to an understanding of who she is and why she acts the way she does.
Oh, that's so good to hear, because, you know, it is a challenge to write a character that is so, you know, she's not empathetic. She's very pragmatic, and but what I really honed in on was her fear, and how, you know, she's just afraid of change. She's terribly afraid of the other. She lives a world of real fear, and I think that, you know, people who react in homophobic ways or racist ways or xenophobic or whatever, I think ultimately that's coming from a place of fear and misunderstanding. And so she embodies that very much.
Well, we certainly live in a world full of fear, don't we, Silas?
Absolutely. It's and I guess we always have, you know?
Yeah.
Certainly. But that is really at the root of so much of our trouble.
Well, it's really been a pleasure having you back on the program.
I can't thank you enough for how closely you've read the book, and I'll look forward to seeing everybody up there.
All right, yeah. Silas is going to be here on Wednesday night. You can meet him. He'll be at Books & Company at 7 o'clock. That's Wednesday, June 27th, at The Green in Beaver Creek. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO, and it was a pleasure to reconnect with Silas to talk about his novel, Southernmost. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks for tuning in.